Plundering treasure is our next topic, and it's not a Viking tactic from the distant past. All over the United Kingdom, modern treasure hunters, they scour fields with metal detectors looking for treasure. And for some, it's a hobby, and they do report what they find, and others hunt illegally under the cover of darkness to sell on the black market. And their misdeeds and crimes against the protection of history are on the rise. Well, Mark Harrison has a passion for protecting the past, and he's the head of Heritage Crime and Policing Advice for Historic England. And he joins me now on Skype. Good evening, as it is there, Mark.
Good evening.
Mark, in the police force, you rose through the ranks to Chief Inspector and then you became District Commander for Kent. How did that evolve into you being one of England's top heritage crime busters?
I didn't actually become the Chief Constable of Kent, but I did become the Area Commander for Cansbury District, which is where I grew up and went to school. So that was a strange experience, getting to see some of my schoolmasters having raised myself to that position. The disciplines of policing and archaeology are quite similar. They both involve collecting information and evidence and putting a case together and then reporting on it. Back in the 70s, there wasn't a lot of scope to have a career in archaeology, so I joined the police service. But I kept on my archaeology as a very active amateur.
What draws you to the past so strongly?
Well, growing up in Kent, we are blessed with a very rich and diverse historic environment. So you may have heard of places like Dover Castle. And as a youngster, I was taken there repeatedly by my parents and my grandparents. And I think it's just something that was instilled in me. And the research shows that kids that are taken to historic places early in life do retain that passion. And I think I did retain that passion. I knew I wanted to be an archaeologist, but it wasn't open to me in the 70s. And I just kept trying, joined the police. But as I said, the disciplines are very similar. And then in 2010, the opportunity came along to become the policing advisor to, as we were then, English Heritage, now Historic England. And to be able to put those two skill sets together was, well, a bit like a dream come true, really.
Meant to be. How fantastic that you could have come to what your dream career or life was.
Yeah, it's been a very active second career for me. And of course, now we're able to take what we've learnt over the last 10 years of the Heritage Crime Programme and instill that in the young people that are coming through.
A few years ago, you led this group that found a shipwreck off the coast of Kent. And were you looking for that specifically, or did it just turn up in front of you?
Yes, I'm the director of Timescapes Kent. We're a very active local history and archaeology group here in Whitstable on the North Kent coast. And we were actually out surveying World War II defence works, these concrete buildings that were put up in 1940 to help prevent the predicted German invasion. And we found a large piece of concrete that was part of the demolition. And we found it was sitting inside this large wooden oval. We sent a few images off to our colleagues at Historic England, and within a couple of weeks they were down. And it was latterly identified as being part of a Tudor shipwreck built in the reign of Henry VIII.
Gosh, what a find. It must have been very special to have found something that is so far back in history.
Yeah, you know, 500 years. We initially thought it was probably 19th century. So you can imagine the surprise of the volunteers when the dates came back from the people that dated the ship using tree ring technology to say that the trees for it have probably been cut down in about 1530. So, you know, that's a real stretch of time. And for it to survive that long in the mud is just incredible.
And it was by the book, Mark, and there are divers out there who, who are looking for shipwrecks and they're looking for anything that's been left there, but it's illegal, isn't it?
Well, obviously, Great Britain's been an island now for nearly 10,000 years. We've been surrounded by water since the end of the Ice Age. So there are a lot of ships, a lot of boats and other vessels out there. I did say to one of the national newspapers a couple of years ago that if we pulled the plug on the English Channel, what would it look like? It would, you know, would be a graveyard of vessels that had sunk either due to bad weather or conflict or bad construction. We're just seeing the tip of the iceberg, really, with what's out there. But you're right, there's a right way of doing these things and there's a wrong way. And part of my job now is to identify that small criminal minority that are involved in unlawful diving operations. We are blessed, though, with a great cohort of community divers, amateur divers, very skillful divers that go down, they follow the rules, they make some amazing discoveries, and we work very closely with that community to identify the wrongdoers.
Is there any part of discovering a shipwreck that is legal? Can you just, as an amateur, take things off a ship?
Yes, you can, as long as you follow the rules. As long as the vessel is not protected under certain laws, you can remove parts of a vessel or artifacts from a vessel, but you must report those finds to the receiver of wreck. You know, this is a very ancient role. And if she, at the moment it's a female receiver, if she can't identify the owner within 12 months, then you're entitled to a reward. So done correctly, doing the correct paperwork, following the rules, it is legal, yes.
In many cases with a shipwreck, there wouldn't be an owner, I'd imagine.
Yes, so for something like our Tudor wreck at Tankerton, just to the east of Whitstable, that sits on land that's owned by the Crown. So the owner of that one's the Queen. Military vessels will generally be owned by the Ministry of Defence here in the UK. And of course, during the last World War, lots of German and other enemy vessels and aircraft did crash and sink in the sea, and they still belong to their governments.
I see. So if something like a cannon is removed from a shipwreck and it goes on the market for collectors, how hard is it to prove that it came from a protected shipwreck?
Well, I'm guessing here you're referring to the case of Vincent Walsgrove.
I am referring to the case of Vincent Walsgrove from Kent.
Yes. Vincent, a very skillful diver. Unfortunately, he reported cannons in a fraudulent way. At that time, we, the police and the receiver of wreck, were not in a position to prove that those cannons had come from a certain ship. It was only later, through painstaking work by our friends at the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency and colleagues in the Netherlands, that we were actually able to show that they'd been seized by the English during the Anglo-Dutch Wars of the 17th century and been placed on an English ship known as the London. And that definitively proved that he'd removed them from the wreck of the London. An incredible case. And of course, he received 2 years imprisonment.
Is he out now and still diving?
I know he's out and about, and knowing Vince, he's probably diving as well.
Within the law, we hope.
I hope so, yes.
On the subject of British law, you have something called the Treasure Act, which came into force in 1996, and it defines exactly what treasure is. Such a wonderful word, but what is it in the definition of law?
It's one of the longest definitions in English law. It replaced the medieval rights of treasure trove, and it sort of brought it all together. And it also came into effect to encourage people that were finding metallic objects to report them to the coroner in a timely fashion. It is a long definition. But what I generally tell people is it over 300 years old? That's the first thing. And does it have a precious metal content of at least 10%? And then when it refers to coins and other objects associated with human burials, it gets quite complicated. But the rules and the guidance we give is, if you're not sure, look it up on the website, the British Museum website, and there are 37 specialist finds liaison officers in each English county. So there's one for each county, and they're available. So if you're not sure, ask.
And if it's within the time frame, less than 300 years old, are you allowed to just take it?
No, it's like all property in English law. It will always have an owner, whether it's the Crown or the landowner. Obviously, if it's a site that's protected as an archaeological site or a shipwreck, then there are extra conditions. But if you're out and you have the landowner's permission and you find treasure, then you should be telling the landowner, then telling the coroner, and then it goes through to something that we call treasure valuation. And it's quite difficult sometimes to put an economic value on a rare artifact, but the system allows for this, and you're rewarded for actually putting that find forward. The British Museum may wish to purchase it, or they might put it out to a regional museum, or they might say, no, you can have it back. And in that case, it's generally 50-50 with the landowner. Or the landowner might say, actually, I'd like to keep that. So what we recommend is that the detectress have an agreement with the landowner. So if a remarkable find is made, then it eases any argument.
Detectorous, that's the word, isn't it? And it's such a big hobby in the UK. When did it start?
Well, it probably started after the Second World War, when electronics have been developed to locate mines that have been laid around our coasts, mine detectors. These were big, clunky devices, but they did identify metal under the ground. And over the years, as electronics has developed, they've become more and more sophisticated, more and more accurate. They can penetrate deeper. They can discriminate between an iron horseshoe and a silver coin. So, yeah, it's a very active hobby. There's probably, 30, 40,000 people that actively detect every weekend. And they are making some remarkable discoveries. The Staffordshire Hoard, for example, a wonderful collection of Anglo-Saxon gold found in a potato field in Staffordshire near Stoke-on-Trent. That's now starting to rewrite our understanding of the development of England. So you can see, if that had been found by a criminal rather than Terry Herbert, who did all the right things, not only would we have lost the objects, but we'd have lost all the knowledge that goes with it.
The Staffordshire Hoard. Golly, that sounds impressive. So was that a whole lot of treasure buried specifically in one place for a reason?
Well, the short answer is we'll never know. But the thinking is that it was put together, possibly after a conflict. Lots of the gold is actually twisted and folded over, clearly sitting in a sack or some other container, probably put under a tree. And then the owner didn't come back, or they forgot where they put it. So through a stroke of luck, with Terry being in that field at the right time with his detector, it's opening a window on our past.
What an exciting find too. I spoke to somebody who's very, very keen on mushrooming, and it must be the same feeling when you come across something that is mind-boggling.
A once-in-a-lifetime find. And of course, with that find, millions of people are going to be able to enjoy that, not just in this generation, but for future generations.
I guess mushrooming pales into insignificance, really. But not for mushroomers, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, I think Terry probably had the same feeling as we did when we found the Tudor wreck.
So on this particular subject of finding treasure, and over 300 years old, that's all been sorted out by law. But that's not the only thing that happens with treasure, and that's defined in many different ways, because there's vandalism of historic sites that happen in England as well.
Yes, unfortunately, people intent on stealing and damaging our historic sites and buildings. There are over 400,000 protected sites in England alone. Obviously, our friends in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland also have incredible sites. But Historic England provides the governance for these sites. We don't own many sites, but the public does. And they know what they've got. They understand that they have a responsibility. And they're passionate about the past. You know, you don't live in a 300-year-old house just because of it. You've bought it because of its age, and it is, you know, you're looking after it for future generations. And it's a shame when, you know, a small criminal minority comes along and removes the lead from a church that maybe has been sitting in a village for 1,000 years, hosted weddings, funerals, christenings, hosted worship for that whole period, and then a criminal gang turns up and takes the roof. And it's not just the fact that they've taken the lead or the copper, it's all the collateral impact, the emotional impact on the church community. The fact if they haven't caught it quick enough, the rain gets in, it blows the medieval plaster, it rots the wood, it dampens the cushions and the pews. It really is heartbreaking and morale sapping for a diminishing population of people that attend our churches. So I think that's, for me, is what inspires me to do this job.
How rife is architectural theft, I believe it's called?
Yes, so within our assessment of the threats, architectural theft, which includes the theft of metals and stone, remains our number one priority. And clearly, metal prices do have an impact on the focus of criminals. Where can they get the most reward? So we work very, very closely with our colleagues in the police service, the Environment Agency, local authorities, and of course the community themselves through our Heritage Watch scheme to identify those offenders, to make sure that the churches and other buildings and sites have the best protection to actually prevent crime in the first place. And it's quite difficult to put a number on it, but we've currently got a criminal gang, an organised crime group, that are awaiting sentence at Lincoln Crown Court, and they've already pleaded guilty to 37 attacks on churches across England. So you can see that this, for them, is big business.
Will they throw the book at them?
Well, back in 2016, we were able to speak with the government to actually shape what we call sentencing guidelines. And for the first time, the theft and damage of heritage assets was recognised as a specific component of that guideline. What does that mean in effect? Well, it means that if we identify that charge relates to a heritage asset, so it could be a historic church building, then the court can actually aggravate the offence and give an uplift in the sentence. So clearly, I can't comment on what the court should be issuing, but hopefully they'll take account of the sentencing guideline and issue an effective deterrent.
So the receiver of such goods, this is wide-reaching because that may be metal, as you say, copper piping, roofing from a church, but then there may be, in the Treasure Act, there may be treasure that is over 300 years old. What is the implication for somebody, for example, who buys something like this off the internet, but they don't know where it came from?
Well, of course, ignorance in English law is not a defence. So you should always make checks around due diligence, whether the person that's selling it has the right to sell it. And if you're not sure, you should avoid it. But in English law, under the Theft Act, for a thief, the maximum penalty you can receive for theft is 10 years. For someone that receives the stolen goods, the maximum penalty is 14 years. So clearly Parliament, when they were putting that law together, understood that you needed to deter those people intent on making a profit from the misery of someone's theft. And we have other laws as well. We now have the Proceeds of Crime Act, which is around money laundering. And we've had some successful confiscation orders made. In fact, Walsgrove, who we spoke about earlier on, he actually had to pay £51,000 in relation to the money that he made from selling the cannons to an American collector. So this is about not being able to profit from your crime. And with the police and other agencies, we're now using that Proceeds of Crime Act on a regular basis.
And Mark, is there anything on your list that you are desperate to find that you would love to come across when you're out on your travels?
Well,
not in the criminal sense, I mean in the treasure sense.
Well, we spoke earlier on about the Staffordshire hoard. In 2015, a Viking hoard of golden objects was found in a cornfield in Herefordshire near the Welsh border, and there is an outside chance that that actually belonged to King Alfred himself, and the detectorists were on land without permission. They removed it hastily, and they then tried to dispose of it, but we got the intelligence that they were selling the coins in London. And we seized those objects, and we only got 12 objects back from that hoard, which is now known as the Herefordshire hoard. In December last year, four men involved in that case were sentenced to a total of 24 and a half years in prison. The treasure valuation on the 12 objects we recovered was £3 million. I would like to get the other 188 objects back, because not only the Staffordshire hoard rewrite our understanding of the development of England, the Herefordshire hoard would add to that knowledge as well. So if anybody knows, has any intelligence on where those 188 objects are, please get in touch.
They could be in this part of the world, you never know.
You never know. So that's the message I'm putting out there. My last message would be is that those people that are enjoy diving, enjoy metal detecting, we work with them incredibly closely, and they follow the rules. What we're talking about here is a tiny minority of criminals, and you know, it's irreversible loss and damage that they're causing. Yes, there's 3D printing now. Yes, we can make copies, but it's not the original. And that's all I can say, really.
Very good. And Kent, just finally, how is everything with in regard to COVID-19 and lockdown?
Well, actually, the two boroughs either side of us, Swale and Thanet, are the first and third highest in the country.
For cases,
yeah. And that wasn't the situation a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that's not good. And what about you personally, Mark? Is there anything that you would really like to add to your own collection after you'd had it verified, of course? Something like, I don't know, a medieval ring from a king or something of that nature?
Well, after the discovery of the Tudor vessel, we then found another wreck. And she's come back as being built in about 1720. So she's from the reign of King George the First. And she's also connected with smuggling. But if I was going to say what I'd really like to find, I would like to find a dugout canoe from the Stone Age.
Wow. Are there any around?
Yeah, and with global warming, rising sea levels, coastal erosion, more and more of them are being exposed every year. And you've got to get there quick because they're very delicate. And so we're out as often as we can. And yeah, I'm hopeful.
So it's something to do with the sea as opposed to the land.
Yes.
Very good, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with the treasure hunt, and good luck with catching the criminals.
Okay, thanks for asking me.